Wait, let me look that up on the internet real quick.
TagCastPodcast.com.
We all know Amazon has amazing deals and free shipping on orders over $25. If you use our link on our website, TagCastPodcast.com, we'll get a small kickback and you'll be supporting our show. Just go to the top right hand of our website, TagCastPodcast.com.
And now, it's time for the TagCast Podcast with Terry and Gatch. My name's Terry Guile.
I don't like your jerk-off name. I don't like your jerk-off face. I don't like your jerk-off behavior. And I don't like you. Jerk-off.
See, because I paid a lake for weed like in the 70s and I never got the real one back.
You just got tagged.
What you just said is one of the most insanely idiotic things I have ever heard. Everyone in this room is now dumber for having listened to it. May God have mercy on your soul.
And his name is Dustin Gatchel.
I heard in Hawaii, your spam email is your good email.
The TagCast Podcast starts right now. We'll start it over.
More cowbell.
More cowbell here at the TagCast. Welcome. I am Gatch.
And I'm Terry.
And today on this bonus four of season one, we are going to be talking about the Motley Crue discography. In the past, we've kind of talked about years, but we're kind of open to music, movies, years, artists. If anybody has any suggestions, probably send them right in, right?
And who doesn't like old Motley Crue?
I know.
And some people even like new Motley Crue, which we were just finding out that there's a brand new single coming out.
I know, and it's called Sex. It's all about the sex.
Wow.
I have not heard it.
That kind of sounds like the bass player's last name.
Nicky Sex. It wasn't he. There's a rumor because Edward Penis Hands, that porn movie, was Sicky Nicks was the guy in that. Was the main actor in that.
Wow. Did it look like him at all?
Well, it looked like Edward Scissor Hands, but with two penises on his for fists.
I guess he kind of looks like Nicky Six.
My favorite part of that movie, though, is where he's with this young lady and he goes to shake her father's hand, who's in a business suit, and you know he's got penis hands, and he shakes the guy's hand and he just starts jizzing all over his suit.
You actually saw a part of it, or all?
Oh,
of it?
I watched the whole thing.
Awesome!
It's probably one of my favorite comedies of all time.
I remember that's not a comedy; it's porn.
It is fucking funny.
So yeah, we're gonna cover the Motley Crue. They came out. I think they formed in '81. I'm not sure when the first album came out, but
'81 with Too Fast for Love.
I didn't hear that until after I got Shout at the Devil.
Shout at the Devil was my first foray into there.
But then I went back and delved into the other one, which then I decided that I liked better because it was more raunchy and less produced and more hardcore a little bit.
They had songs like the Live Wire on there, right?
Oh yeah, Live Wire, Public Enemy number one, which we were just hearing on the intro, a live version with more cowbell. Yeah. And Tommy Lee was not afraid to hit that cowbell.
He wasn't.
He used it on Live Wire. He used it on Come on and Dance.
Both those albums are pretty cowbell.
A lot of cowbell, there. So
and classics.
Yep, and they got together in '81. I believe Mick Mars was the last member to join.
Yeah.
And
he was 65 when he joined.
Yeah, so now I think he's like 102. this says here Motley Crue was formed on January 17th, 1981.
Wow, and then they released their first album quickly after because it was November when it was released.
Yeah, Nicky Six was in a band called London at the time, and he just left that band, and then he met up with Tommy Lee. Started working on songs.
Tommy Lee.
Oh, no. Another world ender.
Uh-oh.
Mick Mars, that's not his name.
What?
His name's Bob Deal.
Oh, it's not even Mick?
Bob Deal.
No.
That's a great deal. Bob
Deal. I know,
Deal.
He should have kept that.
That's not a very good metal name.
No, maybe if he was a drummer. That's a good drummer's name.
What about Robert Deal? How about Bob?
That's like Robert Trujillo.
Bob Deal. Damn it. Now, no Ween, there's no Dio, there's no Mick Mars.
Man, we're just destroying ourselves
here. And you say that this isn't an informative podcast. I just learned that his name was Bob Deal.
Yeah, I know. So yeah, I mean, Too Fast for Love. It was, it had, like you said, that raucous sound. Is that what you said?
Yeah, I didn't say that. That's what you read on the thing before we got on here. But I said it was raunchy.
Raunchy,
maybe a little less produced.
It was a little less produced, and
it was a little more produced than their demos that they released. The Leather Records one. I don't know if they re-recorded those songs or just remixed them.
Yeah,
but I loved that album. Take Me to the Top. That was a great song. Let's see if I can remember them. What was that one? Oh, gosh. It's been so long since I've listened to Too Fast for Love. Of course, it had that song on it as well as Merry Go Round and Round, which I think...
Merry Go Round and Round.
I think they
ever
said
tried
that,
to count how many times
I
he said that?
I think that was in the league with Bob Seger on that one. I think it was 48.
I remember trying to count, but I always lose count.
I think it was 48.
48. Yeah, I would believe it.
No, wait, let me finish. It was 4,800. 4,800 times, it says right here on Wikipedia, they say Merry Go Round and Round 4,800 times.
Yeah.
And then it.
Piece of Your Action. God,
yeah, that's the one I was trying to think
of.
Your Action. That was a rocker, man. Yeah. I loved it.
Starry Eyes.
Yep, Starry Eyes. Oh. And then the very last song was Take Me to the Top. What's that?
On with the Show.
On with the Show, yeah. And that was Frankie Died. That was a sad story.
Frankie died just the other day.
Sucked on me. Oh, sorry. So, yeah, that was a great album.
It was.
And unfortunately,
you know, even though there's a couple
I didn't hear
it.
Well, kind of ballady. Not as ballady as... what was the big ballad on Shout at the Devil?
Well, that's not even Motley Crue, right?
No, I'm talking about on Shout Out the Devil, the next album they had.
Oh,
Danger was kind of...
Danger? You don't like Danger?
I love it, but it was kind of ballady. I loved it. Oh, that had a backwards message in it. That had a backwards... That was a...
What did it say?
I can't remember.
Regnad.
But, like somewhere in the song, and I can't remember now, but it was on the same tape that my dad gave me from his preacher friend that had like Led Zeppelin backmasking and Queen.
Yeah.
And that was one of them in Danger. It said something about Satan or something.
On the back of the vinyl I had, this is probably one of the first vinyls that I had passed down to me with a pentagram on the cover. And on the back it said, may contain backwards messages. Somebody didn't know whether
or not,
but they did.
And
but
Vince Neil just looked like kind of like a hot chick.
Yeah.
I was kind of put off by that. But and he had that weird thing that came down by his, it looked like a knife sheath.
Yeah.
That was on his thing.
Yeah.
Like on his chest. It was weird, but.
Rolling Stone gave the Shout at the Devil 2 stars.
Out of 5?
Yeah.
That's poor. Fuck, it had Helter Skelter on it by the Beatles.
Ba-na-na-na. Yeah. Yeah, that's probably the. I probably heard that one before I heard the Beatles version.
Red Hot.
Yeah, that
first
was
first song off side 2. Busted into some Tommy Lee double bass.
Yep.
Well, all right.
Yep. Yep.
And then the other big hit, of course, we skipped was. That song about Ron Keel.
Yep, looks like Ron Keel.
Looks that Keel.
Ron Keel.
Oh, and you got in trouble for calling your mom a what?
A bastard. I did. I called my mom a bastard one time after hearing this album. I didn't even think I knew what it meant. Well, I didn't know what it meant physically.
You knew it was
a bad
word.
I knew
it
was a bad word.
So she said to you, consider that bastard dead.
Yeah.
Go to your room, you little son of a bitch. You little shit.
I actually was already in my room. She just left.
Get out of here, you bastard.
Yeah.
And she's a woman. Kind of woman? I guess
too young to fall in love.
Yeah.
10 seconds to love.
And knock 'em dead, kid.
Mm-hmm.
Knock 'em dead.
The blade is red,
too
kid.
Too Fast for Love. I heard that if you listen really closely at like 1 minute and certain seconds, you can hear a girl moaning or choking on a cock.
Oh, really?
They were doing her in the studio.
Wow.
While recording the vocal tracks.
Wow. Is this something you read in one of those expose books?
I read it on the internet, so I'm 99% sure that it's true. Maybe while we're talking about it, I can even find it.
Yeah. So the intro of the Shadow of the Devil had that kind of eerie...
Everybody knew how to say that all the way through, too. Like I've talked before on other shows, they had the top 5 at 5 on KGON.
Mm-hmm.
Shadow of the Devil ruled number one for a long time after it came out. And... they always played the intro with it too, and it was like, I can't remember it now, but what's the first line?
In the beginning, all man's
something.
Yeah. that was a pretty controversial song, and they actually came out and said it was like, the devil's your boss. You're yelling
authority,
at your boss.
Yeah.
It's authority. And I don't know if
and when I thought about it,
they were just kind of going, eh.
Because I'd heard Running with the Devil and other devil songs by Black Sabbath.
Yeah.
Thought, and I thought, shout at the devil. What are they saying? They're like, tell him to get out of here? Or are you shouting at him because you love the devil?
Yeah.
And the parents wanted to find some reason why it's devil music because they say devil, but...
Controversy is always sold in music.
Right.
But in the seasons of Whether You Stand and Deliver, Stand Strong and Laugh and...
Actually, Tom Araya from Slayer was quoted as saying, we don't actually worship the devil, but it sells records.
Yeah,
and
sure.
It does sell records.
You know, especially for those guys.
Especially for Slayer, who sold tons of records without any airplay hardly whatsoever. So, now, Motley Crue used to get, like I said, even on KGON and the rock stations when they were coming out before they got more glammy and more commercial, they were still getting tons of airplay. They were playing Live Wire. They were playing, you know, Looks That Keel.
I reached like number 17 on the charts.
Yeah.
And Tom Werman, he did this album and the next two albums.
Uh-huh.
The name sounds familiar. Did he produce other albums in that era?
He did Van Halen's first album, maybe their second and third. Tom Werman, he did a lot.
So he was pretty influential in the sound of
I think
rock
he was even
time.
Doing, like, before he got into metal and stuff, he was doing, like, the Doobie Brothers and stuff in the 70s, So a lot of the people that were doing classic rock, as music evolved, they evolved as producers and actually started producing, like, a guy that used to produce a lot of Queensryche and maybe Judas Priest, Neil Kernan. He's now doing, like, Macabre and Cannibal Corpse.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's
and
cool.
And he's, like, 60 now, and he's doing, like, death metal, which is kind of cool. Yeah. So I don't know. I think Shout Out the Devil was probably my favorite of all of them, even in hindsight.
Yeah, I think so. That and Too Fast for Love, probably definitely the top two that I would probably rotate more in the future years.
Yeah, yeah. Because, you know, then along comes what? Theater of Pain?
Theater of Pain in 1985. And, I was a crew head for a long time. You know, I listened to this one and probably even like the little Home Sweet Home.
Right.
For a while until it was overplayed to death.
Right.
And Smoking in the Boys' Room.
Smoking in the Boys' Room
with
was a big video
with
hit.
The guy from The Hills Have Eyes in it.
Yep.
And
now I try to remember more songs off that album. Maybe you can help refresh my memory. I don't. I remember
There's
Home Sweet Home. And then you had. Was it not? No.
This was after he had been in that wreck with the guy from Hanoi Rocks.
Oh, yeah, he killed it. Well, he didn't really kill him, but he did
involuntary
kill him.
Manslaughter, right?
Right.
Just like Randy Blythe. And what happened to Vince Neil in that? Do you know?
I think he got a lot of fines and a suspended sentence and some rehab and some other stuff because they kind of go lighter on celebrities, as you probably know.
Yeah, and but he had been driving drunk and.
Oh, yeah, and so, fast and out of control.
So you got the City Boy Blues.
Don't really.
City Boy Blues.
I know,
know that's just
I know that he played
melody.
Some more harmonica.
I'm louder than hell.
Huh.
Keep your eye on the money.
I think I was thinking that they were getting a little
tonight.
Too.
Tonight. We need a lover tonight.
Yeah, I think they got a little too glammy for me because, you know.
Save our souls.
Shout at the devil.
Heavens.
They were more like dirty. Metal guys with leather and spikes and stuff, and then all of a sudden they have like purple scarves. And
you think this is the beginning of their probably like burnout of being like partying a little too hard? And
no, they were just getting started, I think, as far as like reading heroin diaries and stuff. Yeah.
You gotta raise your hands to rock, fight for your rights
to party. Yeah, I don't really.
You know, you had the big songs of Smoking in the Boys' Room and Home Sweet Home, and those are probably really.
The two hits.
Yeah. Probably all you really needed to.
And then, like, right around when that album came, or the next album came out, was right around I started
87?
getting CDs.
Wow. That's pretty early for CDs. I started getting CDs around 89.
Yeah. I got Master of Puppets and Girls, Girls, Girls.
Nice.
Were some of the couple of the first ones, but only because it was available through those.
Yeah.
Columbia House
BMG.
Or BMG.
Yeah. I remember getting... the next album after this, Dr. Feelgood, on CD was probably one of my first CDs, and remember being like amazed at the package, you know,
right.
You were used to tapes at the time where albums, you know, had shrunk to the size of tapes, which is ridiculous to think back that we settled for that as fans, like going from what, 12 inches square of album art to like a 2.5 by 3.
Right. Right. And that was one of the allures of buying, or the lures, or whatever you want to call it, of buying an album.
Mm-hmm.
You get that big piece of art.
Yeah.
And then you got the sleeve that has all the info on the inside.
Yeah.
Or sometimes you get Jip and you just get a white sleeve.
Yeah. Like, yeah, the white sleeve, the BMG Club.
You guys are dicks. But then, you know, what the girls, they went more. Less purple scarves,
yeah.
But still.
Was this the first time Tommy Lee did like his tricks in the cage and all that kind of stuff?
I think it was Dr. Feelgood when he did that. I'm not positive, but.
Well, this is Wildside, so I know he's at least spinning his kit.
Right. And they did that live Jailhouse Rock, which
mm-hmm.
actually got some hits.
Yeah.
That was played on the
Bad
radio.
Bad Boy
once
Boogie.
In a while. Yep. You're All I Need.
Yeah.
I don't know. 5 years dead. And see, I don't know.
Nona, that song is out.
So I had that, and then I was kind of like going, ooh, what are these guys doing? Girls.
Yeah, that song was cheese, wasn't it?
Yeah, and it was in a major
It was
major
like, we
court.
Wear leather, we ride bikes.
We go to strip
chicks.
Clubs, and we go all night.
It's like, all right, Motley Crue, you already know.
Hey, Mick, did you see that chick? She was super hot. She sucked
yep.
my dick. Oh, wait.
What, man?
Run.
Swear, man.
Over here, man. Over there.
Hey.
And so then I was like, eh. And then Dr. Feelgood came out. And
which, what, you know, this is Bob Rock coming in right here, right?
He's the guy that ruined Metallica.
You know, you got Bob Rock, 89 you're looking at. And this album, where Girls went to number 2, this album went to number 1.
Immediately debuted at number 1.
Yeah.
Yep. And
six
my brother
times
had this.
Platinum.
He was into Guns N' Roses, and he got this right when it came out. I think he got the record,
mm-hmm.
the actual full vinyl. They were still making them.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know.
This was heavily, heavily, after they got to number 2 with Girls, which probably wasn't pushed. Well, I guess it was pushed pretty heavy. And then Dr. Feelgood, they pushed really hard, I think, to get them across to that number 1.
And plus, it had like 5 or 6 singles.
Yeah. Yeah, Dr. Feelgood.
Kickstart My Heart.
Without You, which is probably, oh, that's so horrible when they play that on the radio.
Bad ballad.
Like,
bad ballad.
Yeah.
And Don't Go Away Mad, Just Go Away.
Yeah, that song's kind of, it's tongue-in-cheek. It's kind of funny. If you don't take those songs too seriously, you know, if you take them as the tongue-in-cheek, I guess, with the girls, too, you know. It's,
and that's where I started thinking that they sound a lot like Poison, kind of, or Poison sound
yeah.
like them. The same old situation I kind of thought was Poison
yeah.
when I heard it a few
Sticky
times.
Sweet.
Yeah.
She goes down. She goes down, down, down. I don't know. It was a pretty rockin' album, though. It was a pretty Bob rockin' album.
Yeah, you could tell,
but,
though,
you
that
know,
there
was
someone
radio
else at the helm.
Produced to be hits.
Right. Radio produced to be hits, and that's what it was. And the producers are proud of that because they put it out.
And that's fine.
We'll help you write hits.
That's what you're going to do. It's a great album.
And then it comes out at number 1 and spawns, you know, five or six hit singles.
Sure, it did good for what it was meant to be, just like Hysteria, even though that's a shit album.
It's
not saying Dr. Feelgood's in that same league as, you know, as.
It's just a way for them to establish their sold outness.
Yeah,
I
yeah.
think, you know, they're not doing it for the love of it. I mean, I'm sure they still love it and still have fun,
uh-huh.
but the priority is making it a hit and making it sellable
yeah.
And wantable or whatever you want to call it.
And so what started happening at the Dr. Feelgood point that kind of brought their end, because I remember watching the videos, you know, I mean, I watched those first three, well, it was about this time that Decade of Decadence came out after this, right, and they had the Anarchy in the UK and the Primal Scream and the,
And then the rest was all, like, greatest hits.
And it was greatest hits, and they started having problems as a band, but I remember them always saying, Motley Crue will never go on if it's not the four of us, you know, it's all of us, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
And I remember Mick Mars going, I don't practice the licks I know when I practice, I play new riffs. I always thought, and as he was doing that in the video, he was reloading shotgun shells or like,
whoa,
rifle shells.
What a tough guy.
I was like, damn, man.
No, I think it was right around that time that the book Heroin Diaries wrapped up, when Nicky was like really fucked up late 90s and he quit doing so much coke and heroin because he was just fucking wasted.
Getting whacked.
Yeah, and he couldn't perform correctly and whatnot.
And he was like the songwriter too for most of Motley Crue's.
The majority,
stuff, right?
Yes, for
and,
sure.
And like the writer of songs and riffs, I would imagine.
Yep, you know? Except for one song on. Bob Rock continued on with them after they got their new singer.
Yeah, John Corabi from Armored Saint.
No.
Is that correct? No, I'm thinking of John Bush from...
Yeah,
God,
I don't know.
Damn it, I always get that confused.
Who was Corabi from? The Scream.
Yeah.
Which I don't even know. Not to be confused with Scream featuring Dave Grohl.
Yeah, Rolling Stone gave this album 3 stars.
But Bob Rock co-wrote one of the songs. Wasn't a hit, though. Poison Apples. But Hooligan's Holiday, I remember hearing that on the radio a lot.
And there's Uncle Jack, too. Uncle Jack!
And my brother bought that album because he was still digging, like, Cinderella and stuff, and I didn't like it.
But,
and that's when I pretty much lost them. I gave Theater of Pain, Girls, 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 Dr. Feelgood, I gave those all some listens.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't even listen to this full album.
I didn't buy this album, but I heard it from friends, and you know, and there's some good rockin' songs on there, but they shouldn't have went on as Motley Crue, probably.
You don't think so?
I don't... It's a different singer's style. You know, I didn't think he was, like, the Vince style, so maybe they could have went... I don't know. That's always a tough decision, what you would do in that situation, especially if it's only 1 out of 4 that are gone.
And some bands, like I remember AC/DC saying when they replaced Bon Scott, that they had some people that came in that sound so much like Bon Scott that it was eerie and it tripped them out. And they're like, we're not looking for a Bon Scott sound alike. We're looking for someone who we appreciate. And
yeah.
I don't think they sound that much alike at all. I think that new Brian Johnson is like different than Bon Scott.
For sure.
But like the Queensryche thing we're talking about, that new singer, he sounds like Jeff Tate. And I think the guy from Journey kind of sounds like Steve Perry. Just because he's trying to or whatever. So so did they officially break up after that self-titled album with John Corabi?
I'm not sure if they did.
Huh. Because that was that 90, 91, somewhere around there?
No, this was 94.
The Corabi record was?
Yeah.
Okay. So at that point, I was already into death metal, and I'd kind of lost all my love for hair bands or light metal or whatever you want to call it. But so I didn't even realize that they... didn't break up, but I guess they just got back with Vince Neil like 3 years later, huh?
Yeah. Yeah, well, Vince Neil wanted to go and race his race cars after Dr. Feelgood because that's how he kickstarted his heart.
Ah.
Yeah, and then they had an EP, it says here, the Quaternary, which it says released in 94. It was initially going to be titled Leftovers, was made available as a mail-in offer for purchasers of the self-titled Motley Crue album, but only 20,000 were printed.
Wow, I've never even heard of it.
Yeah,
but like I said,
either.
I was into death metal and stuff at that point, and I didn't really care. But
Planet Boom, one of the songs off of there, was released on the soundtrack for Barbed Wire.
Now, was that before Generation Swine?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, this was in like an EP alongside the self-titled.
Ah.
And so the Generation Swine.
That came out in 97.
Yeah.
I had a remix of Shout at the Devil.
Yeah.
Did you ever hear that?
No, but it had Scott Humphrey, new producer.
It says that the album Motley Crue was a commercial failure.
Yeah. It also had Vince Neil came back. But John Corabi stayed on rhythm guitars and backing vocals.
Weird. That would be so weird.
It would be.
To be the singer who replaced the singer, and then we're bringing him back, but you can still play some rhythm guitar. We're going to keep you turned down kind of low, though.
Yeah, that's probably all they did. They probably just turned his amp down.
We just didn't want to kick you out.
Yeah, 7th studio album, though.
It debuted at number 4.
Yeah.
Which is not number 1.
It was the last to feature Tommy Lee for...
Now, who did they have when they didn't have Tommy Lee?
Well, it was the next album Well, I can't really count the greatest hits of 99, can I, as an album?
Nope, and I don't remember any of these hits off of Generation Swine.
And then
Afraid.
They had Supersonic and Demonic Relics, which I assume is a rarity. I did not. It's got like Primal Scream and Angela and Anarchy in the UK, which were on the Decade of Decadence, and, you know, those are kind of...
Oh, it was his drummer was Randy Castillo when they didn't have Tommy Lee.
Oh, yeah.
The dude from Ozzy who died.
They had a Hooligan's Holiday on this album, extended 11-minute version by Skinny Puppy.
Huh. Wow.
And then, yeah. You know, they started releasing their demos and some previously unreleased stuff that probably could have remained previously unreleased.
Weird. So after Randy Castillo died, former Hole drummer Samantha Maloney filled on tour.
Oh, wow.
A girl in Motley Crue.
Huh.
Did you know that?
I hadn't.
Wow. The Salt Lake City performance with her is featured on the DVD Lewd, Crude, and Tattooed.
Yeah, that's funny. Treat me like a dog I am.
So then after that album, they kind of broke up for a while. Because Nikki Sixx was doing 58 and Brides of Destruction. Tommy Lee was doing Methods of Mayhem.
Did you see that Randy Castillo, did you say, is the song that he helped write was Punched in the Teeth by Love?
No, did I say? It was Kicked in the Teeth by Love.
Was it?
Yeah.
And White Punks on Dope, which Bill Spooner wrote.
That's a Tubes cover. I mean, that was originally done by the Tubes.
Oh, yeah. And Porno Star, which Nikki Sixx wrote.
Where are all these songs from?
These are songs on Generation New Tattoo.
Generation New Tattoo.
New Tattoo.
Okay. And that's not a Van Halen cover?
No. It's 2000.
Tattoo. Yeah. Tattoo.
So they had two albums in the span of seven albums between some live and greatest hits albums here.
And then they had a compilation album, another one in 2005, called Red, White, and Crew.
Yeah, and in 2003 and 2004, they had Volume 1 and Volume 1 of Music to Crash Your Car To, which, is that right? I mean, crashed his car.
Wow. Hey, this says that the band members' original songs were on this Red, White, and Crew, plus new tracks, If I Die Tomorrow, Sick Love Song, and a cover of Street Fighting Man. And then there was a small controversy when it was suggested that neither Lee nor Mars played on the new tracks.
Oh, wow.
Duties were supposedly handled by drummer Josh Fries, who is from A Perfect Circle, who has also collaborated with Queens of the Stone Age on the Desert Sessions, Volumes 9 and 10. It's weird to hear that these people are included with Motley Crue. So you guys are learning something. I'm learning something. So then they didn't have another album until Saints of Los Angeles, huh?
No, they had, what was Carnival of Sin? So I guess that was live. Yeah, Saints of Los Angeles, which I think was their last studio
album. And I remember
album.
When that came out just about 4 years ago and hearing the song on the radio.
We are the Saints of Los Angeles.
Yeah, they used to play that song on K-Fly.
Bringing in a couple of keys. Oh, wait, that's not even the right song, is it?
No. You always morph songs together. It's fucking awesome.
Well, that's a good song, though, coming into Los Angeles. Why don't Monte Cruz sing that one?
They've probably done that. The Saints of Los Angeles. Oh, Nikki they had Sixx. A song called Motherfucker of the Year.
Yeah, Nikki Sixx said this album's loosely based on The Dirt.
Is that book. Fredrickson that co-wrote all these songs? Is that the dude from Rancid?
Fredrickson?
Yeah.
Lars Fredrickson?
Yeah. Is that his name? That's the dude from Rancid. So the dude from Rancid co-wrote 90% of the songs off. That's fucking weird, dude. That's fucking weird.
It says Marty Fredrickson.
Oh, then that's not him.
Yeah, Lars Fredrickson.
James
is the guy.
Michael and DJ Abisha. Who are these people?
DJ Ashaba. Well, I don't know.
Ashaba.
If you look on DJ Ashaba, he was with...
James Michael is an American record
DJ
producer.
Ashaba is Guns N' Roses' DJ guitarist.
Oh, current lead singer of 6 AM is James Michael.
And he's also known for his hard rock band's Willow Boys.
The Bullet Boys.
Yep. And has worked with Drowning Pool and Neil Diamond.
Oh, God. Martin Fredrickson is an American songwriter who has worked with bands like Daughtry, Aerosmith, Def Leppard, Fuel, Buck Cherry, Crimson Guardian. Age. Wait, Crimson Glory. Just kidding there, Dav Jones.
All right. And then they had another Greatest Hits, their fifth compilation album.
What was that called?
Not to be confused with their 1990. Yeah, two albums. Yeah, two albums called Greatest Hits. They didn't even differentiate the two.
That's fucking weird. Just the yeah. year of the release.
Not to be confused with their 1998 compilation of the same name.
Wow, they should have just named all their albums Motley Crue.
They should have. Their logo was different on every album.
Right. They never stuck with one ever.
Yeah.
And then it says here that their 2012 album was going to be called Motley Crue's 10th studio album.
That's what it says?
Yeah, but I don't think it is. That just says that. But I think it's actually going to have a name, but they don't know what it is yet. But we know the fucking lead-off single.
Sex.
Sex me up.
They're going to put the X in sex. That's what I heard.
The X in sex. Motley Crue Negroes. So, yeah, is there any big Motley Crue fans out there listening? Give us a message on our Facebook.
What's your favorite Motley Crue song or album? Are you still listening to them? Are you still listening to New Tattoo?
I didn't even know that they had an album called New Tattoo.
I want to know people's favorite greatest hits of Motley Crue. Which one of the five greatest hits is your favorite one?
Do you think some of them have the same songs on them?
Oh, yeah. I just looked, and yeah.
Why would they?
I don't know.
Why?
I think some would probably totally encompass other greatest hits albums.
Nikki. Oh, I know. Why?
Maybe he forgot that they already had four.
Sometimes I listen to... Maybe they did. Sometimes I listen to the Six Sense radio show with Nikki Six and Casey Kasem's daughter.
What?
Yeah. Casey Kasem's daughter is the co-host of Six Sense, which is ran on K-Fly from 7 to 12. But they only talk for like 30 seconds at a time, and then they just play the regular old K-Fly music. So it's weird. It's like, hi, this is Nikki Six. You're listening to The Sixth Sense on K-Fly 101.5, which is pre-recorded. Song. And then it'll be like, so we were talking the other day about this person. It's Tommy Lee. And he's tired of people taking pictures of him or something, and he got in an argument. But we'll talk about that in a minute. And then it's like the music's underneath it, and he talks all along until the singing starts, kind of like the old AM stations. But it's just weird. You'd think if you're Nikki Six and Casey Kasem's daughter, who's a stalwart of radio. I love that word, stalwart.
What's that mean for our listeners that don't know what it means?
It means like a champion.
Oh.
That's my paraphrase. I could find out for you. A stalwart. Right. But anyway, Casey Kasem's daughter, and she's pretty hot, too. I can't remember her name, but...
That's almost the band name right there, Casey Kasem's daughter. Is that her full name?
maybe. Hmm. I think I'm using the wrong word, stalwart. That's Walmart I was thinking of.
Walmart. Yeah. Get your steaks at Walmart, says Master Chef.
Firm and resolute.
Firm and resolute. So he is resolute and...
One who is physically strong. Yeah, we're strong, robust, sturdy. Yeah. Stalwart.
That is going to be the next name of Motley Crue's next album.
Stalwart. Yep, available Stalwart. Exclusively at Walmart.
Yep. Hogwart, Stalwart.
I would see them doing the exclusively at Walmart thing, because, you know, they're touring with Kiss with a minimum ticket of $85. And, you know.
Yeah. When am I going to get a Vince Neil action figure?
Yeah, and it would sing bad live. It always would come with its free Nikki Six action figure to put in the studio booth with him. Because on Heroin Diaries, it talked about how he never wanted Vince Neil doing vocals without him right there in the booth to tell him he's doing it wrong or right. Uh-huh. And that's when Vince Neil said that he was kind of selfish in thinking. In retrospect, in hindsight, he said, I must have been kind of selfish to be glad when Nikki was so fucked up on heroin and cocaine that he wasn't at the studio when I could actually do my vocal tracks without him leering over my shoulder and telling me I was singing it wrong. And then Nikki Sixx says, that, well, that's why we have some poor performances on some of the CDs. My fault for being so strung out on drugs.
And those guys just don't get along, do they?
No, they don't. I think they got back together for the band. But it's a good read, though, if you get a chance to read it. I suggest it, The Heroin Diaries and The Dirt.
Yeah, when they sold their soul, that was their punishment, is that they will be together forever.
Yeah, and no, as a matter, doesn't matter how much you guys hate each other, you got to stay together for
and
the band.
And we're not going to
stay together for the kids. Yeah. There was another book of Nikki Sixx's, I thought. This Is Gonna Hurt.
Ouch.
And that's another good one. So
what's that one about? Did it hurt?
It's a lot of photos that he took, because he kind of, like everybody that's rich, he turned into a photographer after a while.
Yeah.
So he kind of focused on some weird focused. He focused on photography. He focused on photography for a while, and then he made a book, and it's just got some other stories. And then, like, if he posts a picture, the internet age. He's not posting them. He's putting them in a book. Mm-hmm. So there'll be a picture in the book, and then he'll tell a story about the picture. And yeah, it's a pretty good read. I haven't read The Dirt yet, but I probably will someday.
Yeah.
So, yeah, maybe our next bonus episode will be something we know a lot about Motley Crue.
Yeah.
They kind of died out for us.
They did.
At that time, halfway
but
through
I was
their
a crew
career.
Head back in the day.
Yeah, and it's funny. I was thinking about it earlier that you called it a crew head. I'd never heard that term as someone who likes Motley Crue being a crew head. Pretty cool.
Yeah.
Pretty
yeah.
funny.
That was sounding. Yeah, back in the day, crew heads.
Crew
when
head,
I'd go down to whatever the fuck that store was and buy Motley Crue
Camelot
shirts. Yeah, back when Hyper Colors were kind of, those were the days, right? Hyper
I think Colors. The last time I saw a Hyper Color shirt was 94.
Yep.
Probably at the Oregon Country Fair.
Yeah, that's right around their self-titled album.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the old when the wrinkled shirts were popular.
Wrinkled?
Yeah.
Those are still popular with me. Because I don't like the iron.
You buy them
clothes.
At the store wrinkled.
Oh, and they stay wrinkled?
Yeah, that was the thing, is they would stay wrinkled, but...
Stays wrinkled, even under an iron.
Yeah, yeah. It was just a fashion.
You can't
fucking
iron that shit out.
What were people thinking?
They weren't, I don't think.
Stick with the flannels.
That's
the Northwest.
Yeah, maybe we'll hit like some 90s shit or something on our next...
Yeah, that sounds good to me.
Maybe we'll go alternative or even just all music of... maybe 91 or 92, something like that.
Yeah.
Something that we're a little more familiar with. Maybe some of our listeners will be a little bit more familiar with, because we're a big hit with the kids.
Yeah. Maybe we'll do a Trailer Park themed list.
Trailer Park Boys?
Yeah.
Trailer Park theme, what do you mean?
Trailer Park Boys theme.
Oh, yeah. They like Helix and Rush.
Yeah.
Mostly bands from Canada, April Wine.
Maybe we'll do a top 10... of Bubbles, kitties.
Kitties. Hey, at least maybe we could get Pat Wambacher to listen then if we were
in
an episode about Bubbles.
Maybe he would listen or answer.
Yeah, we could do an episode about the whole discography of the Trailer Park Boys.
Yeah.
All their seven seasons, two movies, and two specials, and they got a new movie coming out, and it might be in 3D.
What?
Trailer Park Boys 3 in 3D. Mm. You just be like joints coming straight at you. Six paper joints coming right at your face. The smoke's actually coming out. You could actually see the dents in Ricky's head.
Is that going to be in 52.5 surround sound?
Yes, and then you could actually see the dents in Ricky's head when he's laying face down on the gravel, passed out. He's got a couple rocks stuck to his head. It's like, whoa, look at the indents in his head.
Man, remember when people didn't want to watch porn in HD, and now people don't want to watch porn in 3D?
Dude, it's weird to watch porn on a television now.
It is.
Like, because everyone's got at least a 40-inch TV screen.
I know.
It's like, Jesus Christ, that's
just
huge.
It's easier to watch it on the computer.
It's okay, because it's just a little screen.
Yeah.
You're not really watching people fuck. You're just kidding around.
It's just a couple puppets.
And I think that you could watch Tommy Lee's got a sex tape, doesn't he?
I've never heard anything
Vince
about
Neil
that.
Vince Neil had a sex tape. What? Come on, he steered a boat. He steered a ship with it. All right, you guys, I think we're going to wrap this up here. Thanks for listening to our Motley Crue-isode.
Yeah, Motley Crue-isode.
It was a boner-sode.
Tommy Lee-isode.
Yeah, it was a huge episode. This is a huge episode. Monsters of Mayhem.
That's funny.
Methods of Mayhem. But yeah.
I thought it was Mothers of Mayhem.
Check out.
Tell me how to steer a boat with my dick.
Maybe we'll cover some Danzig someday. I don't know.
Or not.
But yeah, thanks for listening to the bonusodes. If you guys like them, we'll keep them coming every Monday. If not, we might just take the easy way out and skip a week.
Yeah.
And if you guys go through withdrawals, then we'll do another one. All right, thanks for listening, you guys.
Sure,
rock on.
Good, week.
Oh, wait, that's your line.
Rock on.
Yeah, and metal.
TagCastPodcast.com